welcome to Encore. Encore is Near FM's Highlights of the Week programme. And on this week's edition, Johnny Holmes is joined on Northside Today by Stephen Large from Threshold, where they chat about the homeless crisis and Threshold's annual report. Later, Ken Kilbride is joined on the Week in Review by Elaine Nevin, director from Eco UNESCO, where they discuss a forthcoming Young Enviro Awards event. And finally, Noel McGuinness is joined on Northside Today by author and journalist Valerie Cox, where they discuss a book on a loan. But first, on this week's edition of Encore, it's Johnny Holmes on Northside Today.
I'm now joined on the line by Stephen Large from Threshold. He's going to be talking about the outcome of their annual report 2016 in relation to homelessness and tenancy issues. A very good morning to you, Stephen, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Yeah. First of all, Stephen, just to drift slightly from the actual topic for our discussion this morning, isn't it a very sad coincidence that in the last few days, two homeless people died whilst sleeping rough on the streets of Dublin, one just outside the forecourts and the other in Ranelagh. And a very, very sad situation, of course, and our condolences go out to their families, relations, relatives and friends. But this surely has to be sufficient grounds now for the present government to take immediate action for stronger investment in homeless prevention as top priority. What's your views on that?
Yeah, well, I obviously would share in passing on the condolences to family and friends of those two unfortunate victims. Unfortunately, they're the latest in a long line. Like, any death on the street is one too many in terms of homelessness, and I suppose it does symbolise the severe problems that people are facing out there, that people are ending up on the streets and unfortunately people are dying. We were in this position last year and had hoped that it would have led to an improvement so that no one ends up in the streets, but yet here we are again. So we have been talking for the last number of years in relation to a housing and homelessness crisis, and this is a result of that crisis.
Absolutely. I believe that in 2016, Threshold took 71,319 calls and helped over 21,600 people during that time with tenancy issues. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we dealt with over 71,000 calls. We probably could have even taken more than that if we'd more resources to be able to do that, because unfortunately there are many, many people out there, particularly people who are renting, that are having problems with their tenancies and are, they're not too far away from being on the streets themselves. They are at risk of being made homeless. Primarily, people are contacting us because they're being given notice to leave their accommodation, sometimes valid. Unfortunately, in many cases, it's not. Not valid, or they're facing rent increases or ways to try and circumnavigate the legislation that covers rent increases now in Dublin. And people are desperate. There are very few properties available out there, so finding accommodation is also a big worry to people. But it's really just the people who are contacting us, it's just that fear that they're going to be asked to leave their accommodation, or a fear that they're not going to be able to know where they're going to be living next year. Fear they're going to have to leave, they're going to be given notice to leave the accommodation and not going to be able to find anywhere at all and could end up homeless.
Yes, that's very true. Almost a third of calls, that's almost like 30% to the charity, were in relation to situations where clients were at risk of losing their homes. And Threshold staff actually noted an increased complexity in tenancy-related queries, with many of its clients in need of in-depth support and advocacy. That's just over 20,000, a sizable figure, and it's very worrying, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, unfortunately. Like, we talk about security of tenure in the private rented sector, but we don't have security of tenure in the private rented sector. All we have are specific grounds upon which a tenancy can be ended, and it's horrible to have that guillotine hanging over you. Particularly if you imagine now that some of your listeners are going to be families, and at any stage they could be given notice to leave their home. And whilst the legislation gives some time-specific time periods, if there are no alternatives out there, you know, that doesn't really help. There's little comfort in that. So we don't have security of tenure in the private rented sector in the same way that perhaps people might have more security if they own their own home, or indeed if they were housed by their local authority. So it is one of the key issues that people out there are facing. And what we've been calling for over the last number of years is that we have to tackle the security of tenure, and we need to provide long-term indefinite tenancy, so people know when they go into a tenancy that, providing they pay the rent and you know, aren't in breach of any of their obligations, that they're going to be living there for the foreseeable future. And that certainly would alleviate a lot of the problems, particularly for families and people, you know, with children going to school, that they know that they're going to be there for the foreseeable future.
Yes. And of the 71,319 calls in 2016, like 14% of the calls were tenancy terminations and substandard accommodation. Another 13% of calls were queries by those seeking accommodation, pointing to reduced availability of rent properties, etc. 37% were in receipt of social welfare payments, and another 44% were clients with families and children. That's all very concerning.
It is, and it is quite complex, and it's all interlinked. But you know, unfortunately, everyone is paying the price for the past excesses and mistakes, and you know, during the Celtic Tiger era, and then we had the downfall and the economic downfall, and for the last decade or so, local authorities simply haven't been building, and we've over 90,000 households now that are on local authority waiting lists. And the reality is that the vast majority of people probably are not going to be housed by the local authority any time soon. And in the absence of social housing, the private rented sector is being relied upon to meet the social housing need. So there are 1 in 5 homes now that are privately rented. But as we mentioned earlier, the private rented doesn't offer the same security that maybe a council house might, or owning your own home might. And that's wrong, and that's something that if the state is going to be relying upon the private rented sector to meet the social housing needs of over 90,000 people, then we have to get real and give people the security of tenure that they are entitled to. They have to get real in providing them with secure, good standard accommodation. And also there has to be tougher measures in relation to rent certainty, so that people truly can say that they have a home.
Right, OK. Stephen, the DRHE, Dublin Regional Homeless Executive, they've now expanded capacity, and I'm drifting slightly from the topic, but they've expanded a capacity by 200-plus permanent bed spaces and an additional 50 temporary bed spaces in emergency accommodation for the winter period. And in addition also to extra contingency measures and enhanced services options during the extreme weather period. What's your personal opinion on this? Do you reckon this will now take all the rough sleepers off our streets, at least for the winter period?
It's a difficult one, because needs must, and you know, we need to provide these emergency measures. You know, because obviously, as we at the start of the programme, we mentioned, unfortunately, with 2 recent deaths, and we don't want any more. I know we've said this before, but really we don't want that to have anyone in that situation. So we do need to put in those emergency measures. But what we need to do is we need to, you know, tackle the issue before it gets to there. And that's going to take a lot of investment in prevention work. So providing people with secure homes, providing people with the supports to keep them in their homes, and that's where our priorities need to be directed towards. And then also in terms of supply, ensuring that there is adequate supply of accommodation for people.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is that many of the rough sleepers were actually in emergency accommodation before, but they're back out on the streets. So that's the reason behind that, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, there will be a cohort of people that will frequently have to access homeless services and will be in and out of homeless services, that takes a lot of work, and you need a lot of support to put in there, and it's an unfortunate, like, no matter where we are, you're always going to have that very small element, and I suppose. But what we have also at the moment is we have a chronic demand for homeless services, in that we have a lot of people who have effectively ended up in homeless services because their tenancy has been ended, and that's why we have over 3,000 children at the moment in emergency accommodation. And so what's really needed is to prevent that from happening, putting further supports and protections into the private rented sector so that they don't end up, that it's not too late to intervene and protect the tenancy and keep people in their homes so they don't end up in that position. Because unfortunately, what experience has shown us is that where a person ends up in homeless services, the chances are that that's going to be repeated. So we need to prevent that from happening in the first place.
Okay. I have to say, Stephen, congratulations on helping so many people in difficulty. And just for the sake of our listeners, anyone out there who needs advice from Threshold in relation to tenancy issues or anything else, what number should they call?
We have a free phone number. It's 1800-454-454. And that's operational Monday to Friday from 9 until 9.
9 a.m. until 9 p.m.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Stephen, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. Have a great day. All the best and take care.
Thank you.
And that was Johnny Holmes, who was joined on Northside Today by Stephen Large from Threshold. Next on Encore, Ken Kilbride is joined on The Week in Review by Elaine Nevin, director from Eco UNESCO, where they discuss a forthcoming Young Enviro Awards event.
Welcome to the programme today, Elaine.
Thanks very much, Ken. Thank you.
That's grand. It's great to have you on the programme today. So, just before we move on to the Young Environmentalist Awards, could you tell us what is Eco UNESCO, who you are and what you do?
Yeah. I suppose Eco UNESCO, we're an environmental education and youth organisation. We started off in 1986 by a group of young people who were very interested and passionate about the environment at that stage. And they came together and developed an environmental organisation. And really, the aim of the organisation, I mean, it's really about conserving and protecting the environment and empowering young people to do that. So we run a number of different programmes all over the country. We're headquartered in Dublin, and we have, as you mentioned there, one of our programmes is the Young Environmentalist Awards. But we also run other initiatives and programmes. We have a peer education and training programme for young people, which is called Youth for Sustainable Development. We also run training courses on sustainability and the environment, and really with the aim of trying to get young people interested and engaged in environmental issues and empowering them then to take environmental action.
So obviously, I mean, just in terms of the awards itself then, obviously it's aimed at young people.
Yes.
So, okay, what age range can I be? Is it different age groups or?
Yeah, I mean, the Young Environmentalist Awards is aimed at 10 to 18 year olds. There are three different categories in it. So we've got what we call a super junior category, which is for 10 to 12 year olds. We've got a junior category, which is 12 to 14 year olds. And then we've got a senior category, which is 15 to 18 year olds. So in each of those categories, young people can do a project in a variety of different, under a variety of different environmental issues. So you might have waste, energy, climate change, biodiversity, water, eco-community development, there's an eco-enterprise category, eco-art and design, and then another as well. So the idea being that this program is a youth-led program, so it's really whatever young people are interested in. The idea is that they follow a six steps our program. It's a framework. So they come together in a group, they decide an environmental issue of concern to them, they develop an action plan, they carry out an action, and then they raise awareness with their peers and then in their local community as well. We also try to encourage them to get, to connect with their local authorities, to look at their local decision-making structures so that they can, link in and find out more about how decisions are made locally. So it's very much, a political and an active citizenship project as well as an environmental project. And throughout the whole programme, the young people also develop in confidence and skills, and they end up making new friends and all of that. So there's many benefits to taking part in the programme. It has a very positive environmental impact, but then it also has a very positive impact on the young people as well.
So let's say I'm 15 and I'm very interested in this. Can I register by myself? Do I have to be part of a team? Do I need permission from a school or parent? Or can I just head over to the website and do it myself?
Yeah, well, if I suppose first of all, it isn't an individual project,
okay.
So it's, I suppose we don't take entries at the moment from just individual young people. So if you're interested, I suppose it's to find somebody else who may be interested as well, or a group of you, and get together. You can do it. I mean, young people can certainly enter the program independently on their own. By that I mean they don't necessarily need a leader with them. But I suppose a lot of the time we will have young people coming either through the school system, through transition year, but then also they may be part of a youth group. They could be part of the youth service, or they could be part of a community group, and sometimes they're part of Tidy Towns, etc. So, you know, it can come from a variety of different areas. I mean, we would basically, as we'll say, we work with young people where they're at. So, young people are involved in a variety of different settings, and any of those settings can get involved with us. So they can go to the website, and there's a registration form. They just need to fill in the registration form at this stage, and have it. I mean, even if they don't have an outline of the project as yet, if they've just even expressed their interest, that's kind of what we're looking for at this stage. So they register their interest to take part. We then have a manual and support that we can provide to any groups that are interested. And they have to do their project and get a project report into us by the end of February next year. And then after that, we have a selection process, and we have these what we call eco-dens. So the eco-dens are Dragon's Den style, dens where we have a panel of experts, and then we have the young people coming in and pitching their projects and telling the experts all about the project that they're doing. And then in May next year, we have our annual showcase and award ceremony. We have over 700 young people. Normally, we've been holding it for the last number of years in the Mansion House in Dublin, and it's a fantastic celebration of young people's work, and they get an opportunity to, learn from each other and also to showcase. So we'd have over 80 of the projects from all over the country on display. But at this stage, it's to fill in a registration form and then send it in to us, and then basically get the project report into us by the end of February.
Okay, so you need to fill in an application. Where do I find that registration form?
It's on our website, ecounesco.ie, so it's www.ecounesco, that's ecounesco.ie. And our phone number is 01662 5491, so that's 662 5491. So if anyone's interested, you can give us a call, or just go onto the website and the registration form. You'll see the Young Environmentalist Awards in the home page. Just click into that and it'll bring you into the registration form, and you can fill in the registration form just there and then. I mean, it's open to everyone. We don't have any charge on anybody entering. It's free, and you just basically you just can enter. We're interested in encouraging as many young people as possible to get involved, we want to encourage and try to support young people as well. So again, we'd have some staff who'd be able to go out and talk to groups if anyone is interested. Any of your listeners are interested, they may be either involved, it may be part of the school, or you might be involved in a local group, maybe in a local environmental group, or just even a local, could be a scout group or whatever. You might be interested. If you are, just get in touch with us, and we'd be delighted to come out and talk to you.
I'm a young teenager, I'm interested. How do I get involved?
Yeah, if you want to get involved, if you just go on to, I suppose the best way is to log on to the website. It's ecounesco.ie, so it's ecounesco.ie. You can just log into the Young Environmentalist Awards section of the website. There's a registration form there. You can download that and just fill that in and get that into us. Or just give us a call on 01662 5491, we'll be able to talk to you about the different activities that we have. I suppose Young Environmentalist Awards is the big project currently that we're rolling out. We do have other opportunities at different times of the year. As I said, we have a Youth for Sustainable Development program that we run, which is an after schools program that we run in the city centre of Dublin, young people can get involved in that as well, and they just have to contact the organisation again at 662 5491.
Okay, Elaine, thanks very much for coming on and telling us all about that, and we'll probably get you back on in May and tell us about the awards ceremony, who won, and all those sort of things.
Brilliant, yeah, I'd be delighted.
And that was Ken Kilbride, who was joined on The Week in Review by Elaine Nevin, Director from Eco UNESCO. And finally, on this week's edition of Encore, Noel McGuinness is joined on Northside today by author and journalist Valerie Cox, where they chat about a book on Alone.
I have author and journalist now, Valerie Cox, on the line. Good morning to you, Valerie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. How are you?
Okay, I was just reading about, not too bad at all, I was just reading about this book a couple of weeks ago, and I said to myself, why did it take so long for someone to write a book about this? And I'm delighted. I was delighted to read that you did. So tell me how it came about.
Well, to be honest with you, I've done a lot of stories over the years on Alone and the work of Alone and the volunteers that have gone out and met their clients and so on. But they actually came to me and they said, look, we want to mark our 40th anniversary and you've done a lot of stories on Alone. Would you be interested? And so I nearly bit their hand off. I was so delighted to do it because I have the highest of regard for the organisation. But the other really interesting thing was that over the years, from the moment go, they always chucked their receipts and all this kind of thing into boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept all those minute books. And back then, 40 years ago, they were all handwritten minutes. But nothing was ever thrown away.
Wow.
So about a year ago or so, they got an archivist in to go through all the materials and to catalogue it properly. So they have this wonderful archive now of Dublin 40 years ago and what was going on and poverty and all the rest of it and what Alone was doing. So I had this marvellous archive to go back to. I wasn't sort of operating in a vacuum, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we just go back over just before we do. I mean, Christmas coming up as well, and we're always putting out appeals, especially around this time, for older people and people to say hello, and the whole mantra of Alone as well.
Oh yeah.
Just alone.ie. If you have any donations you want to make, or even volunteers out there, so just look up alone.ie.
And that'd be great.
As a journalist, can I ask you, Valerie? When you're sort of reflecting and thinking about going back those 40 years and look around today, it's sad, isn't it sad?
It's very sad because, you know, Alone should not still be in existence. And Willie Birmingham never wanted Alone to keep going. Willie Birmingham started Alone as, you know, as showing an example to the government of what they should be doing for older people. But he never felt that it was the job of Alone. And in fact, at one stage, the then Minister for Social Welfare sent Willie a cheque towards his work. Mm-hmm. And he sent the cheque straight back and he said, this is not my work, this is your work, get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you do wonder if Willie had survived, because he was a young man when he died, if he had survived, would we still have Alone? Or would he have browbeaten the government into taking their responsibility seriously and looking after our older people?
Yeah, but I have to say, I think he would have been just beating his head off a wall instead, because with a lot of the agencies out there now, they don't seem to be getting much satisfaction from the subsequent governments.
No, but, you know, he did get a lot of things done. I mean, he was like a little terrier. He drove them all bananas. He went to the Dublin Corporation, the council meetings, and, I mean, he just demanded, and when he didn't get, he just went a step higher. I mean, at one stage, he was looking for a task force, and this would be a sort of a flying column that would rush in when something happened and sort out the older person, whether it was poverty, a crisis, a landlord. I mean, on one occasion, there was a landlord taking the tiles off a tenant's roof. Wow. To get rid of this old lady because they reckoned he'd get more money in the 70s. So anyway, Dublin Corporation said, no, I mean, there's no way you're going to get this. It'll cost too much money. So he went to Charlie Haughey. And Charlie Haughey gave him his task force and gave him the money to provide for it. Now, that was a huge thing. The other thing was housing. I mean, he was, at that stage, there were an awful lot of people in Dublin. Now, housing, the housing stock we had then was a much lower standard. I mean, there were people living in cottages with clay floors. It was mm-hmm. that bad. And, I mean, today, yes, we've got all these problems, but the actual standard of the housing stock is better. Willie went out and built two housing estates of his own, and they're still in existence today. Beautiful estates in Kilmainham, small houses, lovely gardens, and a caretaker so that the older people feel secure and looked after to some extent, even though they're living their lives independently. The other major thing, of course, he did was the getting rid of the pauper's grave, because at that stage, people who had no money were buried in a pauper's grave. No religious service and no marking on the grave. The grave actually was situated between existing graves, and they just popped people in. And one day, Willie was up in Glasnevin Cemetery, and he saw this plain wooden box coffin on a wheelbarrow, and he said to the guy, "What's going on here?" And he said, "This is a pauper, somebody without money. He'll be buried between the graves." And Willie thought this was appalling. So he eventually got the Millennium plot, which had opened for the Millennium in Glasnevin Cemetery, and people are buried there, the beautiful plot, and everybody gets a headstone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a huge thing to do for the dignity of older people dying in poverty.
Well, and the great significance of the book itself, Valerie, you just listened to what you've just stated there in the past 1 or 2 minutes, is the amount of work that's been done. I think people sort of have a snippet and a perception that, okay, alone, oh yeah, I know that, especially as the years have gone by, yeah, that's, you look in on old people and maybe make sure they're all right, but they don't think they see the depth in the work that alone does that you've just stated
sure.
there now.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right there. Because the befriending service is paramount. I mean, this is terribly important. These are people who mightn't see somebody from one end of the week to the other. And volunteers go out there, and they're always looking for volunteers. Volunteers go out and they just sit with the person, have a chat, have a cup of tea for an hour a week. And that makes an enormous difference to their lives. But Alone has gone beyond that as well, because there is still the poverty element, helping out older people, providing housing for older people, which takes an awful lot of doing and an awful lot of money, of course. But in another sense, in a political sense, with a small p, they've gone forward as well, because they have all these experts now attached to them and working for them. And they're able to produce, they're able to research and produce documentation to advise the government. Now, whether the government takes the advice or not, mm-hmm. it's your guess as good as mine. But they're providing all this information, you know, scientifically calculated, so that we now know what's going on in Dublin and in Ireland in general, indeed. What is the role of older people? How are older people? And what should be done over the coming years as the numbers of our older people shoot skywards?
Yeah, I was just reading your statistics, 30% or more, well, just under 30% of people are over 65. And with people That's living right. longer now, the numbers are climbing, so it's going to become much more of a, well, I wouldn't say a problem, but it's going to be, they're going to need more looking after later on.
Well, it is going to be a problem if we don't put what they need in place to look after them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing about it is, you know, people are... We treat older people in this country very, very badly. I mean, that is the kernel of it. We don't look after people who have care needs. We don't look after their medical needs, their health concerns. We fire people out of work at 65 years of age because they're too old, which is quite ridiculous, because what we could be doing is, and of course if anybody wants to retire at 65, that's fine. I certainly didn't. I was forced out. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if we kept these people in employment, they'd be paying into the taxes, they'd be paying their taxes, they'd be contributing towards the state instead of having to go out on a pension. And of course the other way, the thing we've done is older people are not getting their pension at 65 anymore. It's 66 at the moment and climbing. So what are we at? Like, this is not joined up thinking.
Indeed, and it's not about actually about the money either. It's about the socialisation and integration of keeping people in contact with other people all the time.
Absolutely.
And having an interest.
Absolutely.
And everything that you mentioned mm-hmm. about what depression, saving depression and dementia and all like that, it all combines to bring them all together. And the book on Alone, that's available now, I suppose, in all shops.
It's, I'll tell you where it is. It's in Eason's and it's in Veritas. And it's online. And, you know, if you're somewhere around Alone, you can pop in and get it. Alone is in Pleasant Street in Dublin 8. So there's, you know, certainly all the Eastern stores and Veritas, you will pick it up there very easily.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for talking to us. It's been a great, great pleasure
thank
talking
you very
to you,
much.
Valerie. Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
And that's author and journalist Valerie Cox in that book, Alone. As you said, you can get it, it's available in Alone. But just to mention again, a wonderful, wonderful charity, and coming up to Christmas is always quite important to check in on all the people. If you want any more information, you can give them a call at 679-1032, or you can look up alone.ie. So the phone number again is 679 1032 if you want to make any donations, or indeed if you want to volunteer as well.
And that was Encore for this week. Encore will be back here at the same time, that's 4 p.m. next Sunday afternoon, here on Near FM. Have a terrific week. Bye-bye.